Hold your papers up high. Forget all your worries. We're troubled poets can't die. They're the meat of the story.
Welcome to Voices in the Valley, where we celebrate the creative spirit and nurture the art of storytelling. My name is Steph, and usually I'm here with my co-host Dee, but we are taking a short break from Voices in the Valley in January to prepare and reformat the show to include a closed caption YouTube channel and make it accessible as a podcast on iTunes. More on that later, but in the meantime, we thought we'd air some of the best interviews from our How to Write a Novel series originally broadcast a year ago as we began this radio adventure. Today we listen in as student hosts Rebecca and Jill from Matamidi High School interview New York Times bestselling author Jacqueline West on how to develop a writer's routine. And then I have a conversation with author Andy Hewler on how to develop conflict in a novel. But first, enjoy the interview with Jacqueline West and join us in January for this series. Rebecca and Jill, welcome.
Hi, we're so happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. Have you guys ever been on the radio before?
No.
No.
Do you listen to the radio?
Of course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah? What do you listen to? Is that allowed, by the way? Maybe you listen to KLBB. Okay, we're moving on. All right. So, KLBB is your favorite station. Moving on.
Of course.
You guys are from Matamidi, but you are here in Stillwater because we have got a fantastic guest on, New York Times best-selling author Jacqueline West. And I'm really, really excited to hear you guys interview her and find out all kinds of things about Jacqueline and the writing routine and all of that good stuff. So I'm going to turn it over to you. You now have control of the microphone. Watch out.
This is what true power feels like.
Oh, it's awesome, isn't it? Oh my goodness, you better watch it. People are going to be rushing the gates to be on KLBB Radio. Voices in the Valley. Okay, ladies, take it away. Go for it.
Great. Well, I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Jill.
And we are really excited to be talking today to New York Times best-selling author and Pushcart Prize nominee Jacqueline West. We're going to be talking to her about her writing routine and her writing process in general.
And her new book, Dreamers Often Lie.
Yes, we're very excited. All right. So, hi, Jacqueline.
Hi. Thanks so much. I'm delighted to be here.
And we are delighted to be talking to you.
Everybody is delighted.
All right, so I'm just going to start you off with a pretty broad question here. If you had to outline your process for us, your writing process in general, in three steps, what would you say?
I should really preface this by saying that within the last year, I had a baby. And so my writing process, it's kind of like living in a snow globe. Like someone just picked it up, shook it hard, and set it back down, and nothing has landed in the same place. So my writing process used to be extremely stable. I've been a full-time writer for the last 6 years. And pre-baby, I would wake up in the morning, have my coffee, watch The Daily Show, then get down to work, do social media, email, and then I would draft until my lunch break, and then I would get to go walk the dog, do errands, whatever. And now that life seems like a dream. Now I write the way that I used to write when I was an aspiring writer. So it's kind of been a good reminder, because I think it's the way most writers actually write. You don't have the luxury of having all day, every day to sit at your desk and work on your novel. You're writing on the bus on your way to work. You're squatting in the hallway between classes and scribbling things down. For me now, it's writing as fast as I can while the baby naps. Every little bit of time is suddenly so precious. Sometimes, I want to smack myself for the time that I wasted back when I had all of that luxurious free time. But no, my process now is pretty different. So in terms of the actual manual day-to-day process, I am a longhand first draft writer. It has to be pen and paper, preferably unlined paper so I can be sloppy and doodle. And then I tend to type my second draft. I revise as I go, and I draft and draft and draft. And I'm the kind of writer who doesn't show anyone until it's in very unembarrassing shape. So it's often draft 7 or 8 by the time I let anyone see it. And then usually the first person to see it is my husband. And when I'm feeling brave, he reads it out loud to me, which which has become part of my process that really helps because you stop hearing it in all the little voices that are living in your head. You hear it in someone else's voice, a voice that's probably very different from your own. In my case, it is. And it helps you notice things you would not have noticed before. So that's now a step in my process. And after that, and some more revising, then it goes to my editor and there's the whole next phase. So yeah, in a nutshell, I'm sure I didn't do that in three steps. Sorry, I completely missed that.
Oh, that's fine. That's part of the process.
Yes, yeah, I can't stick to an outline. That's part of my process.
All paths lead here.
So with the random sporadic writing, mm-hmm. does that help? Like, does that shape your writing a lot as opposed to like just sitting down and marathoning?
That's a great question. I'm sure it does. I used to, when I had the luxury of so much more time, be a lot lazier, I'm sure, with how you have that feeling of I can write for hours and if it's all terrible, I'll go back and redo it tomorrow. Now things are a lot more condensed. Everything just feels really distilled. And that doesn't mean that everything I'm writing is great, by no means. But it does come out with a lot more focus. I've often had a lot more time to think about it before I actually get to paper. Mm-hmm. And I'm just so much more on fire when I get the chance to do it. Those 2 hours right. in the coffee shop I get once a week are precious time. So
I think it was Ernest Hemingway who said that he liked to finish right before he was going to get to something good. Mm-hmm. So that he was excited to write again.
Yeah, that is a great trick. And I do try to do that one. And often now I have no choice but to at exciting places. But yes, cutting yourself off whenever you have to stop where you know, or at least you want to find out what's going to happen in the next line or the next sentence or the next page. That's a good trick to keep going.
So your newest project, Dreamers Often Lie, it's a YA novel, which is a little bit different from the stuff that you've previously written. Do you want to give us a quick idea of what that's about?
Sure. In a nutshell, I often tell people it's about Shakespeare and romance and brain damage, but I don't mind saying too glib about that. It's about a girl who, she's a high school theater kid. She hopes to be an actress someday. She's in her school's production of A Midsummer Night's Dream, and then she's in a serious skiing accident and has a head injury, which means that she, while she's recovering in the hospital, realizes that she's hallucinating. She's conscious enough to know that this is happening, and yet she can't stop it. And what she's hallucinating is Shakespeare and many of his most famous characters, who not only start appearing in her hospital room, but then follow her back to her ordinary life. And the whole time she's trying to pretend that she's fine and she's sane and she cannot see these things happening, or she would be taken out of school, she'd lose her role in the play, all the things that matter to her would kind of be taken away. And then it turns out that one of the Shakespearean characters she thought was a hallucination is actually real. And that throws another little wrench into Jay's life. So that's what it's about. It's kind of family drama, kind of ghost story. It's Hamlet, Romeo and Juliet, and A Midsummer Night's Dream all tangled up in this girl's life. Yeah.
That just got me really excited, too, I gotta be honest. When is that out and where?
That comes out on April 5th. This spring, and the timing is particularly great because this April is the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare's death. The Shakespeare folios are going to be traveling the country. Yeah, so all kinds of Shakespeare books are coming out this spring, including mine. And it will be available in bookstores everywhere, including Stillwater's lovely Valley bookseller, and I'll probably do a signing there at some point, too. So
that means it's also the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare's birthday.
That's
fun
right.
fact.
That's right. April 23rd, 24th?
Okay. Something around like that. There, probably.
So your books are very creative, too, with the books of Elsewhere being about Olive who dives into paintings. So, like, yes. Where do you get these ideas from? Because they're super creative.
Oh, well, thank you. I think, like a lot of writers, I'm kind of an idea magpie. I often will have an idea waiting in my brain that doesn't get to go anywhere until I find the next idea and the next idea. And then it's suddenly like putting a jigsaw puzzle together. With the books of Elsewhere, it all began with the setting, with this creepy old house. And there was this house in my hometown of River Falls that my school bus used to go past every day, and it stood on the corner near my school, and it was this crumbling Victorian mansion with a yard full of weird, crazy contraptions, and I love to imagine what kind of people would live in a house like that, and so that's where Olive and her weird mathematician parents and their house full of art and mystery came from. And with Dreamers Often Lie, most of the ideas came from the years that I spent teaching high school English, where I was was talking to modern day teenagers and learning about their lives and their drama while trying to connect them to plays like Romeo and Juliet and Macbeth and Hamlet and having them find their own lives and their own stories in these plays. So that's where the seed of that all came from.
Oh, that's great.
So you're also pretty closely partnered with Valley Bookseller right here in Stillwater. Mm-hmm. And how did this happen and what does that entail?
Oh, indie bookstores are just authors' best friends. Valley Bookseller, besides just selling my books, which is what every author wants, facilitated a bunch of school visits for me a few years ago. I think I talked at all of the elementary schools in the Stillwater District, which was a blast. And they've also hosted me for readings and signings. They will sell my books to people anywhere in the country who want a signed copy. They've been wonderful to me. Yeah, and I know to many, many other writers. Independent booksellers are just, they're the bridge between the writer and the reader. So grateful that they're here.
Stillwater itself is just, it's a great community, and it's it's like such a picturesque little town. It's perfect for reading, I think.
It is beautiful. It's a great place to shop. Come shop and go to the bookstore.
So, okay, I'm going to ask you a question here. I think this one's another pretty broad one. What advice would you give to a young writer who doesn't quite know how to start? Because I think probably every writer I know has faced this problem. Mm-hmm. I think everyone would appreciate hearing it, the answer from someone who's conquered it.
Do you mean how to start as a writer or how to start the first line of a story? Or
all of the above.
I don't know how to start my answer. Sometimes it's just trying to get out of your own way. I'm one of the super self-judgmental writers, and I know most writers are. We're so in our heads, and we tend to be kind of, yes, we know what we want to say, but actually saying it the right way is the struggle. Mm-hmm. So for me, often it's just getting it out on paper, not letting anyone see it, and coming back to it after a while. Like, the more time I can take between jotting down those first notes and looking at it again later, usually the more I've grown in between and the more an objective a view I can take. Mm-hmm. And so I can see right away what's working and what's not and what it needs and what questions it makes me ask. So often that's the trick, is giving a little time and being kind to yourself. Other tricks to get started. Find, if you're lucky enough, some other people who love to do it too. I mean, the more people you have surrounding you who share your passions, it really helps you to keep going. If you have a writer's group, somebody who's saying, so where's the next chapter? We want to know what the characters are doing next. Those are a couple of hints.
Oh, great. Yeah, everybody appreciates that, let me tell you. Yeah, that's one of the things that's so great about the Shire Literary Center is we all get to come together and just talk about things that we love to do, which is write. Write and draw and read. And it's a community of people who are really passionate about what they do. Yeah. And even if they're just beginning to do it.
Right. That's fantastic.
Well, thank you so much, Jacqueline, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
It was so great talking to you.
Yeah. Me too. Thank you.
Wish we had more time.
Yeah,
me too.
Do
all so could I, clearly.
Next up, after this short break, my conversation with author Andy Hewler. You're listening to Voices in the Valley here on KLBB 1220 AM.
Hi, this is Emma Atkins, head writer for Hashtag Hush Podcast and actress who plays the role of Andy. The Hush team is comprised of teenagers from all over the St. Croix Valley who write, perform, and produce an original sci-fi radio series. You may have heard our previous episodes played the first Saturday of every month here on Voices in the Valley, but now we are thrilled because after Christmas, we'll be launching Hush onto iTunes. Starting December 26th, you can go on iTunes and subscribe, rate, and review your own hometown, homegrown podcast. Our goal is to become new and noteworthy on iTunes, and you can help make that happen. Hush follows a teenage girl named Andy, whose parents and then grandmother mysteriously disappear. Andy and her friends set off to search for them on a quest that leads into multiple worlds filled with dangerous secrets and manipulative people. The voice of a strange being named Silence, a bumbling police officer who wants to train his pug to be a police dog, and well-intended but misguided adults aggravate the situation rather than making it better. It's been super fun to write and amazing to act in, and we want you to experience it too. So right after Christmas, check out iTunes, find Hush, subscribe, rate, and review. I hope you enjoy the show.
Life was simpler back in the day. The pace was slower, and the food more genuine somehow. It's still that way at Wayback Burgers. We use only fresh, authentic ingredients. Our delicious, juicy burgers are made to order and cooked to perfection. And our thick, creamy milkshakes are hand-dipped with real ice cream, the old-fashioned way. With Wayback's relaxing atmosphere and great food, things are as they were, only better. Taste freshness, America. Wayback Burgers.
My dad says I'm his pride and joy.
My mommy says I was her big surprise.
My mom says I'm her best helper.
I'm adopted. My dad says I was a gift.
That's right, kids. Each of you are a miracle and a blessing from God. Hello, my name is Angie. I work with Pro-Life Across America, the Billboard people. If you know someone who is pregnant and in need of confidential counseling, including alternatives to abortion or post-abortion assistance, please call Pro-Life Across America at 1-800-366-7773 or check us out online at prolifeacrossamerica.org. Pro-Life Across America is educational, non-political, and tax-deductible. Please help support our life-saving outreach.
A baby child is being 18 days from conception.
Pro-Life Across America, the Billboard people.
We've been family-owned since 1922, and we still believe that it all starts with you.
Find your bonus tag at Stillwater Motors. Hurry in and save up to $11,000 on new 2017 Chevy 1500 Silverado Crew Cabs. Find new roads with your next vehicle from Stillwater Motors. Redunds family owned since 1922. Call 651-HEY-CHEV or go to stillwatermotors.com.
Stillwater Motors, good people to know.
This is Steph, and you are listening to Voices in the Valley as we flash back to our How to Write a Novel series. Now we go to the end of January 2016, when Dee and I had the opportunity to have a conversation with author Andy Hewler.
Today I'm a little nervous because we're considering conflict and how to develop it in a novel. Yeah, I'm not liking that sound because Dean and I have been friends for a really, really long time. And so, of course, that means we know nothing about conflict because we've never had a fight.
Never.
We've always gotten along. Right. Well, okay, I'm going to zip on past that. And fortunately for me, because I think I could get in trouble this show, during the segment, we have author and writer Andy Hewler here to help keep you and me in line. He's the author of Dizzy Fantastic and Her Flying Bicycle, Skipping Stones at the Center of the Earth, How I Got Rich on Writing Sea Papers. Okay,
I like that.
That one,
like that.
I gotta check out. Gotta buy that one for sure. All of them, of course, but that one. And Slingers, his latest book. And so we'll be discussing with him how he's developed conflict in those stories later on in the show. But like I said, this week we're talking about conflict.
Conflict.
Yeah, and you're going to be nice to me,
no.
Right?
Can we talk about the diary?
Oh, gosh, Dina, no. That's awful.
No, the diary was the highlight of our childhood, hon. Don't you recall your diary?
Okay, so I'm going to tell the story now because you brought it up.
I stole.
Okay, so I had a diary. I'd get mad at Dina, but I did not have the skills to say, hey, I'm mad at you. You're being a schmuck. Stop it. So instead, I would pretend like nothing was happening, and I'd write really vile stuff in my diary about her.
Yes, you did.
And she stole my diary
one day. And locked myself in the bathroom.
Yes, and I was crying. Dina, no, don't read it.
It was mean of me. I shouldn't have done it. But it was interesting, to say the least.
Oh, my goodness. And I heard, okay, so here I am pounding on the door. No, come out. And I hear this giggle, because I think I had said some boy I liked. And then I hear, and she comes out of the bathroom. She whips my little square diary at me.
I had a nasal voice for singing. I was being Annie. Come on.
Okay, so
it hurt.
I always wanted to be a singer, and I'm not. And I know that. And Dina has a beautiful voice. And anyways, I'm just going to segue into our interview now because I think it's time to move on.
No need to rehash.
Yes. Okay, so we're going to move on to Andy Hewler because he is fantastic and I'm just going to stop right now, and I'm going to ignore you and go to Andy.
Whatever.
So, Andy, thank you so much for coming today. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Stephanie. It's good to be here.
Well, you have quite a list of books, actually. As I was reading those off, I just kept looking at the list, and it kept going on and on and on. And I'm really impressed for Stillwater Boy, because that is what you are, right? You grew up here in Stillwater. You are actually, I live in Stillwater, but I can never be a townie because I was not born here. This is what I have been told. And were you born
in
Stillwater?
That's not very welcoming.
I know. I love people in Stillwater. They're so awesome.
Yeah.
But
I was born in Stillwater. I went to Stonebridge Elementary and graduated from high school here.
Yep. Oh, my goodness. That's amazing. So you are a townie and you're still speaking with me. I'm so glad. Okay. I am just joking here. Stillwater people couldn't be more wonderful and I adore them all. So anyway, tell me, was there anything particular in Stillwater that inspired you to write, or why did you decide to become a writer?
Yeah, I think so. So I went to this amazing elementary school, and there are many of them here in Stillwater, but I went to Stonebridge Elementary, and it was the right fit for me, and I have a twin brother, actually. And
you have a twin?
I do have a twin.
Identical?
Identical twin brother, yeah.
No way!
Who is also a writer, and he is a professor of English, so we followed kind of the same career
path. My goodness, do you ever swap works? Like, you work on one chapter, he works on another?
We never have.
Okay, kind of like swapping clothes?
We're each other's first readers, usually. That's about as far as it goes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that really objective, though? I mean, if you're identical twins, wouldn't that be kind of like you reading you?
I hear you, and it's probably not objective, and it's a different type of point of view. It's also the...
Oh, because it's different environment and all of that.
Yeah, yeah.
He sat on one side of the table, you sat on the other.
Very true, very true. And it is pretty convenient to have somebody else that close in my life to share my work with.
That's really amazing.
Yeah. But to answer your question, I was at Stonebridge. I can think of a couple things, and one of them was when I was in third and fourth grade, there was this structure that was made for kids who loved to read. So it was like floor-to-ceiling cubicles that were built up, kind of like little apartments, and you could drag beanbags up there, and you could just get lost reading a book.
Okay, that is really cool.
Awesome. And I think that it's gone now, and I think there's probably liability issues, kids falling off the top floor and so forth. But it was awesome, and I used to set these we'd set goals with advisors, and third and fourth grade, I was a terrible student. I never met my goals for the week, because instead of reading 20 pages or something, I'd read like 12 books, and I wouldn't do any of my other work because I'd just go hide inside the structure. So you asked, thinking about Stillwater leading to me being a writer, and I think that, like, for most writers, it's with reading. I mean, I loved reading as a kid, yeah.
Yeah, did you write from an early age, too? I know I started writing as soon as I could scribble, even though nobody could actually read what I was writing, and I had to make it up every time I read it because I couldn't read what I was writing. But what about for you? When's the first time you tried to get that story on paper?
Again, as far back probably as you can go. Writing wasn't something that ever felt daunting to me until I got older and started learning rules and started trying to do it. But it was just fun. It was fun to tell stories. I'd read so many of them. I'd had so many read to me. I liked it, yeah.
It's interesting you said it never was daunting until you had to learn rules. And that's a really interesting topic, especially when I think about that our consideration today is conflict and how to develop conflict. And I was about to ask you a question. What's a good way to develop conflict? I was essentially going to ask you for a list of rules. So is that the wrong question when we're talking about writing? I mean, you're also a teacher.
Yeah.
And so tell me, maybe I am misinformed here. And
No, I think more what I mean is that for me, at least, it wasn't until I started writing, like after high school, I started getting up every morning to write. And I've been doing that essentially since then. And all of a sudden I started kind of worrying about what is my audience and who's going to read this ultimately. I don't think that's the way I thought about writing when I was a kid. And that's more what I was referring to. I just kind of wrote a book for myself and didn't really think about the audience at all. Conflict in stories. I think that is actually a fair rule. I think that very rarely do we like to read stories that don't have conflict in them. It's what makes us want. I mean, characters who want something, because we all want things as human beings. And then it's interesting only when they're paired in stories with characters who want different things. And then how do those people exist in the world together, which is very much the world we live in.
Yeah.
So rules of conflict, I think the biggest one is that a story is something that has conflict. I think that's the biggest one.
Yeah, and that is pretty important because nobody wants to watch a movie, read a book, or listen to anything that doesn't have some sort of hurdle that's getting in the way of our main character, who we hopefully like very much. So how do you develop conflict in your stories? You have quite a list of books that you have written. What's your first step? Does it come out a character for you first? Do you get to know the characters and then you think of the antagonist and you put him in a ring to fight, or what do you do?
I think it's been different for each of my books. So sometimes I start with a setting. Skipping Stones at the Center of the Earth takes place literally inside the earth, and I had to figure out who would live there and why they would live there, and that's what led to the conflict. Dizzy Fantastic is about a girl who is bullied a lot, and so that's a very much a character-driven conflict. So I know some writers always go back to one or two, and it has really, for me, just depended on the book I'm writing.
So tell me about your latest book, Slingers. And that's a very interesting book because that was written with vignettes. And so maybe you can tell me first what a vignette is and then how that plays into developing a conflict, because you really are writing a book in a very different way at that point.
Yeah, yeah. So a vignette is so many different things in different mediums. It's a really short film or... it's just lots of different things, but literarily, it's like at least the way I'm using it, it's a short, very poetic piece of prose. It's maybe only like a couple paragraphs long, and that paragraph isn't responsible for advancing the plot at all. Instead, it's just completely inside of the narrator's thinking. So how do you develop conflict while writing these chapters that aren't all plot-driven is interesting. And I think mostly I relied on readers to be able to like the character enough and the character's thinking enough that they and trust that each one was short enough that even if they weren't interested in that one, they can move on to the next one, I suppose, to understand the big questions she's asking over the course of the whole book.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it's from her perspective. She's writing in a journal that a teacher gave her, and it is fascinating because she wants to know why the girls don't like her. And you, as the reader, start to get a feel relatively early why the girls don't like her, and then you watch her take these missteps, and you just want to go, no, don't do it. So it was a really fantastic way to build a sense of conflict and to take us through those hurdles. So tell me, where can we buy these books of yours?
Okay, so Skipping Stones at the Center of the Earth, Dizzy Fantastic and Her Flying Bicycle, and How I Got Rich Writing Sea Papers are all available in some bookstores. It's always hard to know which ones exactly. They're available down at the Valley Bookseller.
All right, we love the Valley Bookseller. Go down to the Valley Bookseller, buy Andy's books, buy Jacqueline West's books, buy everybody's books, just buy books. Everybody should have a bajillion books in their house within a year.
There you go.
From all bought, of course, from Valley Bookseller.
Every single one of them.
Every single one of them. So anyways, and Slingers, it can also be bought online. Is that right?
Yes. And they all can be. Slingers, not yet, but the others through BarnesandNoble.com and any big bookstores.com, I suppose.
Okay, so now you have to stop, but buy them all the other books at ValleyBookseller.com. So only Slingers has to be bought online. All the rest can be bought at ValleyBookseller.com.
Agreed.
Did I say... Well, not .com. They're not a .com. But anyways, buy them there. You get my meaning. All right, Andy, I could talk to you forever and ever and ever, and I hope you will come back as our guest. And it was delightful to have you here. It was so fantastic to read Slingers, and I am going to read all the rest of your books because I love young adult books. I almost prefer them more than adult. So thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
Isn't author Andy Hewler great?
He's amazing, absolutely.
And have you forgiven me for the diary?
I've moved on.
You have a beautiful voice.
Yes, thank you.
I love your voice. You sang at my wedding?
Talk to the hand.
Okay. All right. I'm moving back on the Valley Bookseller because they're a lot nicer to me than you are. I like Valley Bookseller.
And there you have it. Two awesome authors who came on to Voices in the Valley back in January of 2016 as we kicked off our How to Write a Novel series. Join us next week as we continue to flash back and we go to our interviews with Stephanie Lanson, who discusses setting, and David Arndt, who talks about dialogue writing in a novel. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week on Saturday mornings here on the Club 1220.